Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, December 15th, 2017. South Sudan is one step closer to forming a hybrid court on this fourth anniversary of the conflict.
Over the past 2 years, the feeling of Amnesty International has been that the government of South Sudan has been a significant factor in delaying the court's establishment.
And analysts say as South Sudan enters its fifth year of fighting, leaders need to stop and reflect on what can be done differently to bring peace to the country.
This conflict is beyond just the individuals. Because what is the power of the few individuals? All of us, in one way or another, have bought into the conflict. You know, all of us have to ask ourselves questions. What lessons have we learned to change the situation, not just few individuals?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The hybrid court of South Sudan is one step closer to being established on this, the fourth anniversary of South Sudan's conflict. We have several reports for you on the anniversary, beginning with Ayen Bior, who reports officials in South Sudan and the African Union made a major decision this week on the makeup and expectations of the court.
As a signal of the South Sudan government's commitment to the establishment of the court, the African Union and the Council of Ministers of South Sudan agreed on Wednesday to the contents of a document that defined the roles of the court, according to Elizabeth Deng, a Nairobi-based researcher for Amnesty International.
This is the document that would specify the criminal jurisdiction of the court, that would define the crimes that the court has the competency to investigate and prosecute. The statute would describe the structure and the composition of the court and the appointment procedures for the court staff.
The 2015 peace deal called on the African Union Commission to establish the court to investigate and prosecute individuals accused of violating international or applicable South Sudanese law since conflict erupted in 2013 through the end of the transitional period. Deng says progress has been slow.
Over the past 2 years, the feeling of Amnesty International has been that the government of South Sudan has been a significant factor in delaying the court's establishment. Really, they had been dragging their feet and being reluctant in terms of their engagement with the African Union to ensure that it is established quickly.
The government and the African Union are due to organize the signing of the document that is expected to usher in the next phase of the legal process. While some efforts have been made on the humanitarian front to end the conflict, Francesco Lanino, Mercy Corps' acting country director for South Sudan, says the international community is not moving fast enough. Lanino writes the humanitarian conditions are deteriorating faster than we thought possible. He says while a lot has happened in South Sudan, nothing has really changed in the last 4 years.
The food insecurity is still here. The hunger is still here. You know, we had also many cases of cholera in South Sudan. Children really are not really attending schools because of the food insecurity. Malnutrition is very high. What is happening in South Sudan? That really the situation is, yes, getting worse every year.
And Lanino says all of this is happening under the neglectful eye of the international community, despite a rare declaration of famine earlier this year. But Lanino says he's not going to give up on South Sudan.
We still need support from donors, international community, to keep saving lives in South Sudan. We're not really giving up to South Sudan. On the other hand, international community should really find ways and support the resuming of the peace talk and help us to reach the most vulnerable people in South Sudan, to really give us safe access to all the different areas, to really facilitate our work.
The regional bloc IGAD has organized a high-level forum in Addis Ababa next week to revitalize the 2015 peace deal. There is renewed hope that the talks, which will include government and opposition members, will put the country back on track towards lasting peace and stability. Ayen Bior for VOA News, Washington.
The UN Secretary General's Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide, Adama Dieng, says South Sudanese leaders must pressure the African Union to establish a hybrid court to deliver justice for victims of violence that's been raging for 4 years in the country.
I mean, the high-level revitalization of the Peace Agreement Forum should include calling on the African Union and South Sudan to expedite the establishment of the hybrid court. And in addition, it is noteworthy that the hybrid court, even when established, may only try a handful of core perpetrators. I mean, there is need to strengthen South Sudan's justice system in order to try several middle-level and low-level perpetrators, as well as start a credible transitional justice mechanism.
Mr. Adama Deng, the African Union Commission of Inquiry on the conflict in South Sudan released its report, and one of the strong recommendations was the formation of the hybrid court. It's 4 years now. We have not seen the hybrid court. What is happening? Can you bring us up to speed on the progress made so far by the African Union in the establishment of the hybrid court?
Well, I should say that the African Union has done a lot. But unless the government of South Sudan accepts to cooperate for the implementation of this court, it will be difficult. I mean, of course, something which the African Union should consider would be to at least start documenting the crimes which have been committed, collecting the evidence, preserving those evidence. The African Union could appoint, for instance, a prosecutor, a head of investigation who could travel through the many refugee camps, try to interview the victims, collect the evidence. I mean, an excellent work was done by former President Obasanjo as a head of the Commission of Inquiry. They have documented numerous atrocity crimes which were committed, including many cases of rape. When I was in Yei, I was moved to hear testimony about an old woman of 84 years old who was raped. I mean, this cannot be tolerated.
I agree with you that UNMISS needs to be given credit for what they have done in protecting civilians within the POCs. But there are South Sudanese out there who still think there are some institutional failures of the United Nations in South Sudan. So it begs a question, can the UN be held responsible for its failures?
Well, look, the United Nations has its own internal mechanism to evaluate its work, including oversight role of the intergovernmental bodies, like the Security Council, Human Rights Council, the General Assembly, among others. I mean, for example, the Secretary General is required to make periodical reports to the Security Council on implementation of its various resolutions, including on the mandate of the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan.
That's Adama Deng, the UN Secretary General's Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide, speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Dubai on Wednesday. One South Sudanese analyst says all parties to the conflict must commit to ending the suffering caused by the four-year war. The policy analyst at the Juba-based Sud Institute says the conflict has dragged on for far too long and cannot continue. Dimo Silva Arello has more for VOA from Juba.
Analyst Zakaria Ding Akol says the consequences of the war have affected everyone in South Sudan, and all South Sudanese must stop and reflect on what the nation has gone through and learned from it.
This conflict is beyond just the individuals. If it was just the individuals, 2 or 4 or 5 or even 100, and the rest of us are not involved, we would not be talking about what we are talking about today. We would not be where we are. Because what is the power of the few individuals? All of us, in one way or another, have bought into the conflict. You know, all of us have to ask ourselves questions. What lessons have we learned to change the situation, not just few individuals?
Akol says the destruction and suffering caused by the war has robbed South Sudanese of their livelihoods and dignity.
Lives have been lost, and they continue to be lost. People are displaced. Sources of livelihoods of people are destroyed. People are not able to do what they used to do to rely for themselves. They are relying on others. And that is not a very comfortable position to be in, to feel like you are not strong enough to independently do things the way you want, to take care of yourself and your family the way you should, because this comes with a sense of dignity and pride.
He says South Sudanese leaders and allies supporting the ongoing IGAD-led peace process must do an honest soul searching, admit past mistakes, and move on so the fighting can end.
This is the time to reflect about what has been done and what has been done wrong so that it can be corrected, and what has been done right to be magnified so that the goal of ending the conflict can finally be achieved. But it takes more than just few groups. The situation requires a collective response, which must not only come from the South Sudanese stakeholders, but it must also come from those that are concerned and interested in ending the violence in the country.
Akol says as South Sudanese enter into the revitalization process, mediators and grantors of the peace process must avoid the faults that caused the August 2015 agreement to fail in the first place.
The process that was managed by IGAD in 2014 and 2015 was poorly managed. The agreement that was reached was poorly structured. It was not the parties alone that can be blamed for that. There's enough blame to go around. For all those who got involved, people were not sincere. People were not realistic. I see suggestions that have been made by the South Sudanese that have been consulted by IGAD ahead of this, the convening of the revitalization forum. And I worry that people are going to, again, be trapped in being too idealistic and too simplistic about complicated issues.
Akol says participants must be practical. The issues are complicated, and no one should be suffering under the illusion that one individual holds the key to achieving peace. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Meanwhile, hundreds of South Sudanese living in Uganda gathered today in Kampala to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the fighting, which erupted in December 2013, and they're calling on the warring parties to finally end the conflict. Megumi Davis Rakerwinge has the story for VOA from Kampala.
Clad in black T-shirts and dresses, hundreds of South Sudanese listened to songs and speeches calling for peace in South Sudan. 22-year-old Martha Nyanye Gatruak says she fled to a camp run by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, when war erupted in December 2013. Nyanye says she spent a year in the camp and later managed to flee to Uganda together with her family. She says she joined others in Kampala today to remember relatives that were killed during the fighting.
Yeah, I'm actually calling all the leaders to bring us back together. From 2013 to this day, we don't party together. We don't go out as youth of South Sudan and South Sudanese. We sit on our separate ways. There are a lot of hatred in us. We don't love each other the way we used to. So I want this love to come back to us. I want peace, and it is our all call that we should have peace in the country so we can go back as South Sudanese, not as tribes.
The fighting in late 2013 quickly spread to other parts of the country and took on ethnic undertones. The International Crisis Group says at least 100,000 people were killed during the first weeks of the fighting. Over the years, the conflict led to a humanitarian crisis forcing more than a million South Sudanese to flee to Uganda, Sudan, Kenya and Ethiopia. 44-year-old Elizabeth Nyaku Yen was among the South Sudanese commemorating the fourth anniversary of the conflict. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Nyaku urged South Sudanese leaders to end the war through peace dialogue.
My message to the government or the IO is that they should think twice, because our life is at stake. We are not able to get the basic needs. My children do not go to school, and the food that we get from the UN agencies is not enough.
20-year-old Stephen Gatruak says he fled Juba with his two siblings to Uganda in 2013, while his mother and three other siblings fled to Ethiopia. He says he lost touch with his father and does not know if he is dead or alive.
I'm here because I'm grieved about what has happened in my country. It has, for sure, changed my life from where I had been and right now, the kind of life that I live. Because I do not live like a human anymore. From my childhood, actually, I was studying in a school that is among the top schools. But right now, I'm studying in a school that is, the education level is very low. The food that I eat maybe once a day.
Ambrose Lomini Pitia, a member of the SPLM-IO, armed opposition, allied the former first vice president, Riek Machar, also attended the event. Pitia agrees dialogue is the only way to end the fighting in the country.
Our call is for peace, so that there's no need for us again to put back our people to suffer after they have already achieved their independence in 2011.
The South Sudanese here in Kampala today urge their leaders, both in government and the opposition, to listen to each other, resolve their differences amicably, and work to rebuild the country. For VOA News, Ayamugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. UN officials in South Sudan say 4 years after the conflict began, children are still being abused by both government and opposition forces. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what jobs would you prefer your children to take? Why?
Preferably for my own female child, I'd love her to either go for lecturing because of the time, the freedom, because at a point she would also have her own family, and or get to the medical line, sort of, to help her fellow women, which are actually in need.
Currently, you know, there is a lot of opportunity. You may decide this one for your child, and at the end, the child may not have interest, maybe in it. So that one may cause a problem in the life of the child.
I would wish that in future, they should take up practical jobs, a job that you will really feel the impact on people. I would like, for example, my children to work on the medical field.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. On the fourth anniversary of the conflict in South Sudan, and as the country's leaders prepare to gather in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to try to revive the 2015 peace agreement, South Sudanese refugees at Uganda's Morobe settlement say they want their leaders to hear the cries of the more than 1 million South Sudanese refugees and work towards genuine and lasting peace. Simon Peter Apiku reports from Moyo in northern Uganda.
Modi Charles Sekwatoloko, a refugee leader at the Morobe settlement in Uganda's Moyo district, says the refugees want peace more than anything else. He says South Sudanese leaders must cast aside their differences and be prepared to make the concessions necessary to end the conflict and restore stability in the country when they meet in Addis Ababa next week.
They have experienced the suffering here, so they feel if our leaders could really come down and reconcile them themselves, then they really give us that peace, we shall also rejoice.
Ludia Awate is the mother of a three-year-old child who lost contact with her husband in South Sudan's Upper Nile region. Awate says she also lost contact with her parents, whom she says were hiding in the jungles of Yei River State when she fled to Uganda earlier this year. Awate urges South Sudanese leaders to bring peace to the country so she can return home, be reunited with her loved ones, and go back to producing her own food.
I wish if these people could talk with the elders so that to bring peace in my country, I go back. Because there, I dig. I can get things in the garden.
Binya Chaplain, another refugee at Morobe, says this time the leaders can allow the participants to end the peace talks open-ended because the refugees have suffered for too long.
We are really asking our leaders, let them speed up and let them really come and listen, think about us who are suffering here, so that we really go back and we stay in our own country peacefully.
Sekwatoloko says the refugees are anxious to return to their country, but cannot do that until it is safe.
Here there's no education, medication is not good, feeding is not okay, but if we are in the countryside, we have our land. We make agriculture and we even take care of cattle.
Awate says leaving South Sudan had never been her choice. But she was forced to flee after witnessing so many atrocities committed against innocent civilians.
These people are burning us, including my brothers. They have burned 5 brothers of mine. So these people, they burn them. Even we fail to get the dead bodies. So after and then we get it when it's spoiled.
Sekwatoloko argues the 2015 peace agreement focused too much on satisfying the political ambitions of the leaders of the warring parties and not enough on the interests of ordinary South Sudanese like himself.
We need peace for everybody in the country, not peace for themselves alone. We need peace even up to the ground level. That is the peace that we need, an everlasting peace, not peace for only 2 or 3 years.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, is expected to convene the High-Level Revitalization Forum on South Sudan's 2015 peace agreement in Addis Ababa on Monday. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Moyo.
Senior United Nations officials visiting South Sudan this week say the Kiir administration is not doing enough to end the many human rights abuses and atrocities being committed during the 4-year conflict. Two members of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan have been meeting with government officials, civil society activists, and religious leaders across the country for the past 5 days, as we hear from Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Yasmin Soka of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan says killings, rape, the burning of houses, and the forced displacement of thousands of people continue to this day in South Sudan, and women continue to bear the brunt of the abuses. Soka told the reporters in Juba today the government must do more to end the culture of impunity in South Sudan.
The best way of dealing with impunity is to hold those responsible accountable. And so I think on that score, we have not seen much effort.
South Sudan Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman Maiwen Makol denies the government allows human rights abuses to occur.
I'm saying it is not true because we have done a lot. We have a lot of things that this government has done in favor of bringing peace to the country. And we are working with the region and international community to do the same. And so we accept that, yes, there are violations, but these violations, when they come, the government takes care of them, and we are making sure that we do what is right for the peace to come.
Andrew Clefan, another member of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan, says not only do rights abuses continue, but civilians are regularly deprived of basic needs.
I wouldn't like to say it's the worst in the world, but it's certainly in the bottom league, if you like. And the situation, as we've already said, with regards to education, health, access to food, but also the ongoing violence and the fear of violence is pretty incomparable to most other human rights crises around the world.
Soka recently visited Wau, where thousands of residents sought refuge either in a UN camp or church compounds following the latest wave of violence there last year. Soka describes the once bustling area is now a ghost town after thousands of residents fled their homes due to violence and rights abuses. Soka says she met many women who shared their stories with her. She says one 60-year-old woman said she was gang-raped by 3 soldiers and left on the roadside to die. Soka is calling on South Sudanese and regional leaders to quickly establish a hybrid court and ensure transitional justice, accountability, and healing are achieved as stipulated in Chapter 4 of the 2015 peace agreement.
You think about the joy with which South Sudan came into being, and you look at it now so many years down the line, you ask yourself the question, how do we change this around? And that really raises the responsibility of the region, of the government, of the leadership, of all the warring factions. They need to make peace, because if this goes on, it's going to be almost impossible to turn the tide again.
The two UN officials are scheduled to visit refugee camps in Ethiopia and Uganda over the weekend, where they will meet regional and African Union leaders. They will also meet with the other senior UN officials to push for regional efforts to end impunity of human rights abuses committed in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
And as South Sudan enters into its 5th year of conflict, a new report by the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, says half of the country's children have been severely affected by the fighting. A UNICEF spokesman in South Sudan says hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese children are victims of violence, malnutrition, disease, and forced recruitment. Nabil Biagio has more on that story for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan UNICEF spokesperson Tim Irwin says
The four-year conflict has been a tragedy for children.
It has displaced more than 2 million. It has created a million refugee children, more than a million refugee children. Many children have died, have been maimed. Many are out of school. It's really had a traumatizing effect, I think, on many, many children in South Sudan. And it has put their futures in jeopardy. And, of course, if the children have no future, then what future does the country have?
Irwin says the war has also destroyed hundreds of schools and hospitals.
Unfortunately, schools have been attacked and destroyed. We think about up to around 30% of schools have either been occupied or attacked at some point during this conflict. Many medical and health facilities have been attacked and destroyed as a result of the conflict.
The report entitled Childhood Under Attack says nearly 3 million children are severely food insecure in South Sudan, with more than a million being acutely malnourished. When children cannot eat, they are vulnerable to doing things they ordinarily would never do. Irene says, both the government and armed groups are responsible for recruiting thousands of children into their ranks, even though the leaders of both sides vowed not to recruit children.
We have an estimated 19,000 children who remain in the ranks of armed forces and armed groups. We have seen an upsurge in the recruitment of children since the fighting escalated last July and July 2016. So the numbers of children being recruited is increasing. We have not had any real significant releases of any child soldiers since 2016.
Irene says around 10,000 child soldiers were released in 2013, but since then, more children have been recruited by government and rebel forces. South Sudan in Focus placed repeated calls to the spokesman of the Sudan People's Liberation Army and the SPLA-IO for comment on this report. Neither party responded. Irene says insecurity and poor infrastructure in South Sudan makes accessing vulnerable children very difficult.
There are far too many areas of the country where humanitarian organizations such as UNICEF cannot reach, sometimes because there's active fighting there and we wouldn't put our lives or the lives of our partners in danger, but often just because of obstacles put up by armed group roadblocks and so on.
UNICEF says it needs $183 million to reach children and women in desperate need of humanitarian aid in 2018. It says 77% of that amount has yet to be secured. The report says 2.4 million children have been forced from their homes, while 900,000 children suffer from psychological distress. Irene says around 16,000 children have been separated from their parents or families by the conflict. UNICEF and other aid agencies have been able to reunite an estimated 5,000 children with their families. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
That's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song No More War by Ross Corby.
All over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, to stop the war. No more war in Africa. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East. The people are fighting the peace. No more war in America. The people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today. They're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide. Not even a single place to run.
We've been listening to Ross Corby with the song No More War. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a safe weekend. Tell us what you think about the show. You can reach us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or check us out on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We were creating the image and the likeness of God. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun.
And if in times the rain will fall, can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart? No more war in Africa. The people got to...